It's Monday, May 22nd, 2006, and you're listening to Episode 2 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 37 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan, and today I'm here with Chad.
Howdy.
Adam.
Hey.
And John.
Hey there.
We actually have all four mics filled up. This is a fully hosted show today.
A first for this show.
It is.
Being the second show.
Yes.
Well, that's an incredible record so far.
We're batting 1,000.
The topic for today that we're going to get to here when we get to the advice portion of the show is we're going to start, for the next several shows, working through a mock Shadowrun game. And we're not going to bore you with the details of the game or blow by blow.
No stories of daring do or anything like
right.
that.
Right. It'd be very hypocritical after what we talked about in the last podcast. What we are going to do is use the life cycle of the game to use as sort of an outline to talk about the do's and don'ts, how to create good characters, write good plots, so on and so forth. And the topic for the first one today is how to make a good group, not the characters themselves, but sort of the concept behind why the characters are together. And we think this is an important part.
And not necessarily why the characters are together in terms of, you know, oh, we need a fighter, we need a medic, we need the vehicle guy, we need the translator.
Weapons guy.
Yeah. You know, we're not talking about that. We're talking more about a matter of, you know, where these people come from, how do they know each other, why would they be doing these things together?
And we're going to talk about not just how to do that, but also why we think it's an important step that most gaming groups skip. Mm-hmm. But before we dig into that, before we started the recording, John was telling us this excellent story. We were going around the table talking about our
I asked him a question. John?
Chad did indeed.
What was your first role-playing game?
Our first role-playing game experiences, and mine was rather special. There's a box set released, I think it had a 1994 or 1995 copyright date on it, that was Introduction to Advanced Dungeons & Dragons, 2nd Edition. It came with the standard amenities, a full set of dice, little counters, a rollout, not a hex map, but a square battle map.
Ooh.
Sample character cards. But one particular product that came with it that grabbed my heart was a tape, an audio tape, of a model game of Dungeons & Dragons played by people who were probably 25 years old trying to sound like they were 12. It was brilliant.
Clearly experts in their field.
What was on this tape, exactly?
Well, there was this kid who obviously was the hero protagonist, a DM who brought his friends together to explain the game of Dungeons & Dragons.
So it wasn't even like, you know, their story of their characters and stuff, but it was like the tape starts out, hey guys, let's play some D&D.
Well, it started out that way. It got to the characters in the story. I believe they came to a well or something, and the concept of being able to try anything was explained by example.
Token obstacle.
Precisely. One of the more brutish players suggested that since you can do anything in Dungeons & Dragons, his character would float to the bottom of the well safely. The DM explained that you could try anything in D&D, but it was up to he, the referee, arbiter, role player, GM, DM, call you what you will, that would tell you whether it succeeded or not.
Well, how accurate was it? Did anybody try and attack the well?
No.
Did the well fight back?
It was clearly a group of actors rather than a group of 12-year-olds because the well wasn't smashed into bits and experience points weren't claimed in absentia from the DM. Other than that, though, it was great. There were little sample adventures, you know, the 10,000-floor dungeon crawl, the haunted mansion. And at the very back of it was a blank sheet of graph paper, and it said that whatever you
just one.
I stole the rest from my sixth grade science class. No. It said you can put maps on here and creatures and treasures and rooms, and it's all real in the game world, perfectly legit. And I thought, oh, man, this could go on forever.
What would Tom Hanks say about this?
He would send me to hell along with everyone else who played Monsters and Mazes. But fortunately, out of all the crappy alliterative game designs that have come up, Monsters and Mazes has yet to actually surface.
Indeed.
Swords and Sorcery, Trolls and Treasure, Dungeons and Dragons.
Okay, now the first role-playing game that I ever played.
Yes.
We're talking like 1988.
And this was you and me, Dan. These two guys weren't involved.
Right.
Yeah.
They were born yet.
These youngins weren't born yet. We were just back from the war.
Indeed. Against Australia.
Tell us a story, Grandpa.
How was Grenada?
It was great. We kicked some butt. So, yes.
The only thing I remember most about is the fastest Star Trek role-playing game. It's actually a pretty good game.
Oh, it's a wonderful game. It's much better than that new one that they put out, which is just awful.
You know, I flipped through the new one just out of curiosity, and I wasn't real impressed.
Mistake. Hopefully you were wearing gloves.
No.
Oh.
I wasn't, which is why to this day I still can't touch my wife.
Ew.
But the one thing I recall about it was partially because of the complexity of the system, but also because we were so new to the whole idea. It took us, on average, 3 hours.
3 hours to make it. It was my first character I ever created. I remember you were out cutting the grass, and I was with your brother, and we were going through the character creation process, and we weren't, like, screwing around and telling stories and talking about what's up to. I mean, we were, like, at work making this character, crafting this piece of art that took 3 hours to make. And it was a fun 3 hours. It was a really interesting because their character creation system is great.
Oh, there's definitely something glandular about making a character, especially in a new system.
Yeah.
It excites my bowels.
And for the first time, too. I mean,
absolutely.
Never.
Never forget your first time.
No, you never.
So, Chad and I are the old ones, and you're talking about your bowels.
Well, I'm still young and ready to go at a moment's notice.
It's still funny at your age.
Yes, it is.
When you reach the ripe old age of 29, you know.
30. We're 30, Dan. Just admit it.
No. We youngins discovered this thing called rounding. So you're actually 30.
We sure did. And now that the generation gap has been clearly defined, Adam, do you have a funny story about your first role playing experience?
Actually, I do not. It was a pretty lame experience.
Well, discretion is the better part of valor.
All right. Well,
I'm sitting with one of the DMs.
if you don't have anything interesting to say about it, we're going to have to fill in with a different topic.
Mm-hmm.
And, Chad, tell me about this is something I refuse to do.
Okay.
Role playing in a hobby gaming comic show.
Ooh, yeah. Whoa, you remember
we've been down this road.
See, now, let me explain something first in case. Some people didn't know is that in most comic book shops or most gaming shops, hobby shops, they have an area set aside to play role-playing games. Usually the bigger ones do. This could be the basement. It could be the back room. It could just be an area that they have set aside with some tables out.
It usually looks like a dungeon.
Yeah. Well, I went to this one up in this mall. It was like this kiosk in a mall, right? And their front window.
Danger, Will Robinson. Danger.
There was a front window where they had a 3x5 card table with four people sitting around it playing a game. And we're not talking like a cool looking game that people would want to see, like 40K. It has lots of miniatures and stuff and terrain. It's neat to look at. No, we're talking pen, paper, bag of dice, four dorks sitting around. Role-playing in the window in a shop in a mall.
In full view of everyone.
In full view of everyone.
Paying professionals or just here's a roof. Customers for us.
Yes. Now, here's a roof and some deodorant.
In your mind, was this advertising or a warning?
It was clearly an attempt at one and in the reality of another.
Yes.
All right. I personally cannot role play in even like, certainly not in the mall
right.
for the Poindexter factor, mm-hmm. but I can't.
Let me ask you about that. Let me segue right from that. What do you think about the nerd factor nowadays of role playing games?
All right.
I think it's different from when we did it.
Growing up in the time that we did.
Yeah. About 15 years ago.
A lot of things that are now cool to do, or at least acceptable to do, when we were growing up were big social no-nos.
Oh, I mean...
Well, like what?
Video games.
Video games.
For example, if you had a console, like a Nintendo or whatever, and you played a lot of video games, I mean, now it's everybody does it.
Yeah.
But when we were...
I guess we take that subculture for granted.
You guys talk about playing old school games like Zelda and Mario and stuff, and you talk about that, and everybody's playing... Yeah. We didn't talk about it. Nobody talked about that because that was something really, really nerdy to do. Now you have t-shirts and chicks play it and chicks are into gaming and it's really cool and stuff.
What a hollow world.
Yeah.
But so, all right, because I realize it's not as true as it was. And I think playing.
Oh, not at all. I think it's pretty
cool. I think playing Dungeons and Dragons in the window of a mall store is still crossing that line.
Well,
yeah, there's that line that you just danced across.
It's pushed back, but it isn't eliminated.
So that's why I can't do it in a mall. Now, I can't do it in a hobby shop for two different reasons. One, the gawkers.
The gawkers.
The people you
love to watch. Just standing around watching you do it. As I said in the previous broadcast, I feel wrong.
Well, role-playing in
front of I'm too self-conscious.
So like we said, role-playing is not a spectator sport.
But there's a breed worse than the gawkers. The interloper.
The interloper. So, and we had problems with both. Adam and I here, I think it was before you got into our gaming group, John.
It was.
We didn't have a place to play. We were looking for a place to play, and there's a hobby shop in St. Louis, and they had an area set aside, and they had open gamings.
Really mean free at the hobby shop.
Yeah. And so we took them up on the offer, and they had tables set up. You can come in and play whatever you want. And at first, we were a little different. We played a different kind of role-playing game.
We did.
There were some people, they were playing War Games, 40K and whatnot. And there were a couple other role players there, and they were playing more of the, you know, I take one step forward. Okay, you get attacked. Okay, roll the dice. Okay, it's done. I take another step forward. I get attacked.
Yeah. Move your marker.
Move your marker.
Prepare for combat.
Yes.
All right, combat's finished. Move your marker. Prepare for combat.
It was
combat's finished.
Yeah, it was pretty non... Well, anyway, they had their fun. But we played, you know, we had stories, and we had characters, and we made it colorful.
And it sounded like we were interesting.
Yeah. We were
fun.
Smiling and laughing and stuff.
Having a good time.
And people started hanging out around us, and they listened to our stories that we were telling each other. And then we started getting the people who wanted to insinuate themselves into
there
the
was
group.
That group that wouldn't come out and ask us to join,
yeah,
but they would start to schedule in that night that they would just happen to be at the shop every week.
They would like interject things and
maybe you should do this,
dude.
Who are you?
we kind of like, we didn't push them away, we weren't rude or anything, we just kind of like huddled a little closer and like tried to ignore them. But the manager of the hobby shop came up to us and they're like, hey, you know, this is open gaming, right? And we're like, oh yeah, we know open gaming. You know, you can play whatever you want. You know, no tables are reserved. First come, first serve. Yeah, that's cool. No, that's not what open gaming means. It means that if you're running a game, anybody who wants in, you have to let in.
Atrocious.
And we kind of gave them the eye and we're like, dude, that's not going to happen.
I think the last straw was when people started showing up weekly to our games that we didn't know.
No.
But then...
And not to play. They weren't playing their own games.
Yeah.
They were, like, hanging out around us in this nebulous cloud, and we got really uncomfortable. They were nice and all, but that's not what we were there for.
No, gaming with a group of people at the hobby shop is kind of weird.
Yeah, even if I were completely dispossessed of a place to play, I would just hop in the car, drive over to East St. Louis, and pick a nice bare spot of ghetto street before I would let five people I didn't know, polite as hell, look over my shoulder and see what I was doing. It's like skinny dipping when one person in the pool has their trunks on. It's conspicuous. Everyone is as ridiculous as I am, or no one is, and I'm putting my trunks back on, drying off, going home.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. Yeah. It was like shortly thereafter, if not immediately thereafter.
Yeah.
Well, we need to find a house.
Yep.
Getting back to what John said, that is the one situation I could validate playing in a hobby shop, is if you don't have a place. You know, for example, now being the age I am, I have my own house. I don't know, but some people may disagree with that, thinking, you know, their wives are just as happy to kick them and their friends out as their parents were.
Well, but, I mean, you got to do what I do. You have to get her into the group.
Right. Or drop the hammer.
Yeah,
the hammer.
The hammer. Yeah, the hammer always works, right. Which is why we do role-playing advice and not marriage advice.
Correct. But certainly you can be at those points in your life where, usually through parents, but later in life, maybe through wife or kids or whatever, you just can't game at your place. And so you have to go looking for somewhere else. And maybe you have nowhere to go but a gaming shop. And it's sad that once you get there, you're just open meat for the gawkers and the interlopers and
but
bizarre
it is a,
management rules.
It is a public, public place. So. Right. Yeah, well, I mean, it was cool. It was all good.
And as socially cowardly as gamers can be, never underestimate them when they see a game they want to join. They won't ask a girl out to homecoming, but damn, if they see a group they want in, they will hound you.
Oh, yeah.
For this week's product review, we're going to actually talk about something that's going to segue into the mock game we're going to run through to give us these advice topics. Mm. And for the mock game, I decided to use Shadowrun.
Yep.
And the reason we're going to use Shadowrun is because...
I don't really like it.
I don't like it either.
I've never played it.
This is shaping up to be a great product review. We chose Shadowrun because it's a relatively generic game in terms of its setting. It's not quite fantasy. It's not quite sci-fi. It sits between them. And there's enough there to give you some variety of situations, variety of character mm-hmm. types, and so on and so forth. So let's go real quick then into a kind of a history and review of Shadowrun.
Yeah.
The first edition.
Oh, first edition. It was a massive, thick textbook written by Isaac Asimov on quantum theory. Oh, it was awful.
We'll let the old people talk for a moment, Adam.
Then you rip out the pages and reorder them into something completely illogical, and then you sell it.
Yeah, if you've never seen first edition Shadowrun, the universe was pretty good and well-developed, but the rules were unnecessarily complicated.
Yeah.
The rules were also not in a real good order. You had to do a lot of page flipping mm-hmm. to figure out even the simplest of tasks.
Yeah, like creating a character. It's like you start on this page, and then you had to flip several chapters over, 60 pages over. Yes, this thing had like 200 pages in it or something. And you flipped over, and you had to look at this chart. And then you had to flip back, but not to the original page you were on. You have to flip back to something that's 30 pages ahead of it. And then you lost your place. Like, okay, well, what's the next step? And then you flip back the character and you can't find the next step. And
try picking up a 3.5 edition player's handbook and making a character with five straight pages back to back to back. Yeah. I don't think that's gone.
No. So,
second edition, though, cleaned up a lot of that. I was really pleased with, in second edition, they consolidated the rules. They simplified a lot of the overly burdensome rules. And I thought they made a pretty solid game. And third edition was just the logical next step up from that. They cleaned up a few rules, but if you've got a second edition character sheet in front of you or second edition whatever, you can probably adapt it to third edition.
And I like the art in third edition, too. Had that loose guy, whatever his name was, doing some of the art.
Now,
pretty funny.
Fourth edition, I have never even touched.
Yeah, me neither.
John?
Yeah, me neither.
Because Shadowrun's not that great of a game.
Yeah,
no, it sucks.
And it's fourth edition's also not by... either FASA or
Wizard. Oh, it's not Wizard of the Coast?
FASA became WizKids, or sold a lot of their stuff to WizKids. But no, it's not by either.
What the hell is there, Steve Jackson?
Fourth edition is actually by FanPro.
Yeah, they make the new BattleTech, don't they?
Oh, the old
classic BattleTech. That sounds like some sort of illicit feminine hygiene product that you're not supposed to buy, but you always know that aunt or mom that does. And you never talk about it.
What?
Keep talking about your horrific Shadowrun game, Elders.
Oh, God.
I don't know what's going on over there, but...
Even the kids don't follow that one. So
FanPro. Or Shadowrun.
Well, there's the nickel review of Shadowrun. It's a great game if you've never checked it out. I'm sure most people have.
Really?
Shadowrun's hardly an obscure
title.
I mean,
you get into that debate of what is a good game, what is a bad game? Because, I mean, do you believe that even a bad game could be made good with a good GM and good players?
Or
do you believe
that a bad game... I believe can make a good game bad, but then it makes it an entirely different game.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's Champions. And that's awful.
That is awful. Okay.
Yeah. There's no way. Not even
moving quickly along.
The best group could make that good.
Yeah, I think there are a few systems and a few titles that are so far gone, they're just not worth one.
Yeah.
But I think with most of them, if you clean up the rules a little bit, you're careful about how you conduct the game and build characters, I think you can salvage a good game out of anything.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's always tweaking that's going to go on.
Oh, always
you can't,
tweaking.
You can't crack any book and start playing and then
that's part of the fatal flaw of the D20 system, I think. They've got themselves convinced.
That's more than the fatal flaw.
Yeah,
I've got a lot
no
of
one's
going to
turn around with that because everyone's agreed on it now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And actually, D20 system, we're not going to do it today, but
on the big board.
Yeah, I'd like to dedicate a whole show to that at some point in the future.
We need to take a picture of the big board, put it up on the site for people to read it.
Yeah, we
maybe
it's sexy.
Maybe do suggestions.
A very big board.
He was taking pictures of the big board.
Okay, so... Moving on to today's actual advice topic, as we said before, today we're going to talk about building a group template, and we're going to talk about what one is, why we think you should build one, how to build one.
Now, are you talking also a form piece of paper?
Actually, I'm glad you brought that up. What we're going to do to help support today's show is on feartheboot.com under the resources link. For the next quite a few episodes, we are going to post some things that we've worked through as we do these shows. Mm-hmm. Some questionnaires that may help you work through the steps we're doing, samples of how we answered those questionnaires.
Yeah.
And we're also going to put up the group design we have in mind for the Shadowrun group we're going to run through this mock game. And we're not going to talk about the characters because that's for the next
broadcast. That's the next one is we're going to do character creation.
We're just going to talk about how we put the group together.
Yep.
Okay, so what is a group template and why do we think they're important? Template is not supposed to describe your characters themselves. It's not supposed to say we're going to have these classes represented.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to play this.
Going to play the healer. I'm going to play the fighter.
But rather, you're trying to design something that unifies the characters in terms of geography,
right?
In terms of purpose, and in terms of morality. And mm-hmm. We're going to define those here in a second. But before we do,
and not even everyone has to be of the same morality, but morality that can work together,
right? And all of these. Something we want to make very clear is we are not suggesting making carbon copy characters.
Right.
Sometimes the diversity, even the conflict, makes for an interesting game. We're just suggesting that you get these characters within 180 degrees of each other,
mm-hmm.
such that...
what do you mean, complete opposites? Not working together? Who would have thought?
Yeah. Yes. No, we've never done that.
Yeah, no, we haven't.
Because one of the examples you gave, mm-hmm. if you want to talk about that with
Which one?
The one with the castle.
Yeah, and I mean, we had this one game where everybody played, you know, somebody played a king, somebody played a courtier, somebody played a centerfold, somebody played the master of the guard and whatnot. All in the town, all in the castle, right? But there's one person who played the forest ranger out in the woods, and they hated the town, and they would never come into the castle, and they would hunt all the time. And so what happened, you had two games running.
Right.
Where one half of the group was bored, and then you'd switch over, and then the other half of the group
and
was bored.
You can get something similar if they have different goals in mind. For example, you have one character where all he wants to do is get rich.
Right.
Yet the plot is about
saving
the maiden, and there's no money involved,
yeah.
And it's just a...
Or like the entire, you know, putting into the group thing, you have the entire group wants to be, they're mercs, and they want to be rich, and they want to do this and that. But the game master has a save the maiden from the dragon, and there's no money involved, and they're not being mercs, so why did they even make this group template of being a merc?
Right. Yeah. So the point of these group templates, first of all, is to bring unity to the characters. Mm-hmm. Unity in terms of what they're willing to do, unity in terms of what motivates them, and also, as I said before, a sort of moral unity, not saying once again that everyone has to have the exact same worldviews and the exact same alignment or whatever, but just that don't mix the evil psychopathic marauder in the same party as the guy who's out to set right all the ills of the world.
Right.
Because it's not going to be conflict just that keeps the game interesting. It's going to be conflict that stops your game.
Yeah.
And then there's just pointless bickering.
Yeah.
You can insert a subtle evil if all players are very, very mature about it, but that's a risk you have to take with
the variation. Is conflict.
On the other hand, too, I do enjoy having there be conflict among the players.
Oh, I love it too.
I think it's just a matter of, the problem is when it comes to extremes. You know, you have the psycho axe murderer paired up with the vigilante. Doesn't work.
Yeah, you certainly.
It works for one game.
Works for one entertaining game, and then goes nowhere.
It goes nowhere.
Yeah, you certainly don't want to have a carbon copy group.
Right.
You just on the flip side, don't want to have people that are so broken up, you can't get anywhere. Because here's what happens. If you have these characters that have no particular reason to be together, that... all of us go to our separate corners. We make whatever character sounds good to us. They have nothing in common. They have no particular history together.
Mm-hmm.
The most they might have, if even this, is one point in time where they all ran into each other. You were all at the same pub on the same day when this happened.
Yeah, that's usually how the game starts.
Two things happen. First of all, the character spends so much time wandering around and... with the game master struggling to herd them back together,
mm-hmm.
each doing their own things, that... you don't get much enjoyment out of the game because you can't get anywhere. And secondly, and related to that, the game master can't write a very deep or compelling game because they spend so much of their time trying to appease 1,500 different desires and trying to stop people running in 1,500
and
different directions.
And I've always told my players that the more you give me to work with, the more I will incorporate your character and your group and your stories into my plot.
Right, and if a group template does that, if you can say, we were all raised in the same town, and we've experienced all these things together, and at one point we all teamed up way back in the past to get rid of the evil baron,
mm-hmm.
you've given the game master something to work with.
Yes.
Well, hey, I can write plots about the intrigue in this town,
uh-huh.
and I can bring back the evil baron who's returning for his revenge.
Yeah, and on the other hand, the game master has to give a little too. I mean, if his plot doesn't involve the evil baron and such... maybe it should a little bit.
Yeah, maybe it needs to. Maybe.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's where I think the danger lies with this sort of concept. As more of a primarily player than GM, I worry when you guys talk about a cohesive character theme if you would make it a plot rather than player-driven game, and good DMs can avoid that, even with a very strong character group concept, but a lot of DMs can't. It becomes about the group as an entity and his devices as the other entity, rather than player A, player B, player C.
Oh, I've always said that the goal should be not getting out a game flow or not getting out, you know, good characters or good plot. Really, as a game master and players, you want to get to a point where the GM trusts the players and the players trust the GM. The GM trusts the players not to screw up his plot, and the players trust the GM not to screw over their characters. And that doesn't necessarily mean not to kill their characters, but, you know, there you are.
In the context of group template, there has to be a kind of give and take.
Yes,
for the game.
Well, you have to work together.
Yeah.
Everybody has to work together. That first night when everybody gets together to make their characters and do all that, this should be the first thing that you do. You sit down and you talk about what kind of group you're going to have. And the GM, well, and that gets to another point, too, is that the GM shouldn't hold the general plot to be a huge secret, because it's like the GM has an idea that he wants to take the people away from the town and conscript them in the army and send them off a million miles away. But everybody has this idea that they want to play a group of people who've never been away from town and don't ever want to leave the town and never have any interest in leaving the town. And all their intrigue, all their stories involves the town. First game happens, and then they get conscripted and taken away.
So let's talk about real quick some of the steps we go through to make one of these.
Mm-hmm.
And I think where we typically begin is the first thing we say is, in general, what do we want this group to be? And in the case of the Shadowrun game, we came up with just a real brief description, nothing long, nothing detailed. Start simple, get complex from there. Don't try to write this as something complex to begin with, and we also don't recommend writing this in chronological order. Just begin with a concept, and the concept we're starting with is that we want to play a group of people that live relatively within the law, that have day jobs, but are people who are interested in cleaning up the system. So combination vigilantes, investigators, detectives.
And they also live in a certain type of neighborhood, too.
Right, but that's getting back into the history. So, but that's a good place. Let's go there next. So with this concept in mind, the next step is say, okay, let's put this in a context of history. What kind of a history can we build that's going to make our characters have a long history together and an emotional investment in each other?
You make them family, or you make them like a sort of family.
Yeah, well, you have to create some sort of relationship.
You have three siblings, and the German they picked up from the street is an orphan.
The background that we came up with is actually loosely based on movies like Boondock Saints.
Right.
Imagine a working class, industrial age neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
You have a hostile world out there. And so what you find is in this neighborhood, these people who are down on their luck, they band together.
Right.
They know each other. They care about each other. If a stranger walks in the neighborhood, you know it because you know everybody in the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And these are people who are hugely invested in their community and in each other, sort of as this, you know, little subunit that's within their broader community of the city as a whole. And if we have our characters come from this kind of a background, as neighbors, we are almost like brothers. We may have squabbled, may have fought, but ultimately we have that love for each other and that love for where we lived. To move the characters forward from there, we decided, you know, we can't, if we just leave things like that, we have a good reason to be together, but we don't have any interesting starts of plots for the game master to work with.
Mm-hmm.
So we can go from there into something like a corruption that started to take over the town. Being a working class neighborhood, you might have had organized crime influences.
Or being Shadowrun, you might have a dragon land in the middle of it. Or...
Right, but some kind of corruption.
Well, some hook.
Yeah.
Some kind of corruption that pops up and over time starts to drive people away from the town.
And see, this is where the game master and player interaction is so important. Is because, like we said, you got to have that hook in there. And that hook can be the game. It could be the plot of the game and that the players and the game master kind of come up together with.
And this is a really tricky point in the formation of the united character group concept, too, because if you don't have perfect unanimity, then you've got something that's just as bad as the fourth guy who has to play the cleric because there's no cleric.
See, I totally disagree with that concept.
You do?
Well, no. I disagree with the guy who has to play the cleric.
Oh, we all hate that. That's an acknowledged evil. What I'm saying is, one dude that doesn't like this concept that everyone else is coming on is just as bad and liable to bring down the whole game.
Well, let me ask you this. Is something we talked about earlier. You have this group concept. The game master is cool with it. All the players are cool with it. The one guy isn't. He wants to play. We have this close-knit community in the Shadowrun universe, and they're in this neighborhood, and they're in the city. And then you have the one guy who's the druid on the Indian reservation 1,000 miles away, and he will not budge.
I suggest that you politely inform him that his character concept can't work, and that if you can't go back to the drawing board and look at something else, he can, while remaining a member of the group, sit out for the game.
I'd say two solutions, one of which is pretty close to what John just said, mm-hmm. which is there's got to come some point of just peer pressure. But before you get to that...
Well, there has to be some compromise.
And that was my other point. I think there can be some compromise where you say, look, you want to play the guy who's the shaman out in the woods. You never want to come into the city. Is there some way you can work with this? You know, can instead of the city, maybe there's a park in the middle of the city that you kind of protect and you watch over the people that come and go from the park. And that's sort of what your wilderness is like. Or, you know, can we maybe for the rest of the group say, hey, will you guys have a few more interests outside of the city that maybe your community we're talking about isn't an industrial neighborhood? It's a rural community on the edge of town. That's part of this guy's domain. But beyond that, you definitely at some point, you got to let the rubber hit the road. You got to say, look, you got to budge on this.
The compromise is necessary because if you don't, the whole point of the group template is that it's a way to unify the characters as a group and hook them.
You're right.
And if everybody is totally in with this group and they all start caring about it, you'll have a better game. When the characters care about the group dynamic as a whole, you're just going to have a better game.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, because that's going to keep them together even when the going gets tough. Mm-hmm. So we've got our concept, which is these investigator vigilantes. We've got a history that brings us together, which is this working class community. And where we left off before we got sidetracked here a little bit is now trying to add in a plot element that the game master can work with.
Right.
Something that, and also something that's going to bridge that time between, okay, we grew up in this community and now all of a sudden, fast forward, we're 25 whatever years old, and we've got, now we're coming back to do this investigative work. What happened between those two points? And what we had worked out was that there was a private school within this community that was one of the cultural centers of this. Mm-hmm. The headmaster was pillar of the community, very active in government, very active in social interests. And as these organized crime and corrupting influences grew on the city, he spoke out against them. And this guy, probably dumped in the river, his school funds were all taken by the city or by some other local institution.
Yeah.
School shut down, and without that school there, the people begin to move away because the neighborhood's going downhill. And pretty soon, all you have left in this neighborhood is the people that just couldn't afford to go anywhere else. Probably even the characters' families drug them away. Many years later, these characters can now come back and say, you know, just wonder whatever happened to the old neighborhood, go back. And, gee, there's the grocer from the corner that just never got out of there says, you got to help me. There's, you know, thugs that have overrun my grocery store won't leave me alone.
Right.
And from there, these guys become the de facto go-to people for the local problems. But what this gave is something for the game master to work with.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the people going the same direction, and the game master now knows what they're interested in.
Now, what's hard for me as a game master with this whole concept, and I'm not saying I disagree with it. I think this is a great concept. But the hard part for me is, as a game master, as soon as somebody says, we're playing Shadowrun, or we're playing Baltic, or we're playing D&D, my mind starts working. I mean, the words come out of their mouth, and I have an outline for a plot sort of framed in my head, and that's really what I want to go with. Or I come to the group, and I'm like, I have this great idea for a game, and I want to go for it. And I think that a lot of players, too, as soon as you say, hey, we're going to play D&D, or we're going to play Shadowrun, in their mind, instantly, before they start talking about a group, they have in mind what they want to play.
Yeah.
They know what they want to play coming to the table. And it's, I think the difficulty comes in reconciling the preconceived plot frame idea and the preconceived character notions.
You got to give and take again. If the game master has a great plot idea in mind, you can do a couple things. You can go to the players and say, look, I have this great plot idea in mind where you guys are all the crew of the same spaceship. Would you guys mind making a spaceship crew? And if they say, no, we just can't do that for whatever reason.
Yeah, well, your players aren't going to be interested, and there's no reason in running it.
A lot of times, if you really dig into the essence of your plot, you can find things that you can transport to any location, to any place. You can tweak a little bit. Now, regarding the players, it's self-disciplined. When you say, hey, we're going to play this game, you're right. Everybody jumps to the, wow, I'd really like to play one of these, or I've been itching to play this. But you just got to have a little self-restraint. Say, look, I'm going to hold this idea until we get that group template. And then once we get the group template there, I'm going to see how we can make this work in the context of this group.
Right.
There's a lot of little components that need to come together before the entire thing can just materialize.
Yeah.
Exactly. There have to be schedules. There have to be agreements on game rules. I mean,
if we go off of gaming for a while, which we have, you know,
First game after a break.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody's rhythm is off and the whole team is disorganized.
Yep. And everybody's like, you know, the game master is kind of going through their notes and kind of thinking like they're trying to sell the game to the people and they're trying to get that hook. They're hooking and it's not catching.
You're thinking back and you're remembering, man, this game was great, but this game. Not so much.
Yeah. It's like,
you get to session
is it me?
Two or three, and you have a very clear idea that maybe it's time to go to another DM. You know,
hey, what are you saying?
I don't like to think about that, John.
Well, it doesn't happen with you, Chad. It just happens with everybody else.
Oh, of course, yeah. You say that to all the GMs, don't you?
All right. I can provide examples.
But for this episode,
sitting right here.
Don't forget to check out the resource link on feartheboot.com, which is where we're going to have some example worksheets that might help you guys think up your own group templates, plus the details we just gave here on this recording about our group template. And please catch us next time when we're going to move from the template to the actual characters and talk about how we made good characters, how we were inspired for them, how we put them together to fill this group template. So, hope to catch you there.
See ya.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot. This show is copyright 2006, fully owned by its host. The games, movies, and other properties mentioned in this show are the property of their respective owners. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com.